Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show today by talking about the book Extra Extra, Eat All About It, Recipes and Culinary Curiosities from Historic Wisconsin Newspapers. And the authors are with us today. Randy Julia Ramsden, with us by phone, I believe. Randy, welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, Jane Conway, the other author. Jane, thank you for joining in.
Thank you for having us as well. We're so excited to talk about our book.
Well, it's a fun book. And of course, Randy and Jane worked together on the National Digital Newspaper Program at Wisconsin Historical Society. And in 2019, I believe, Randy and Jane started writing the Cooking Up History series, which inspired this book. And as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. What's a really old recipe you know? Maybe a weird one. Give us your questions about the way people cooked or ate way back in your 1800s, perhaps. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. I have to say, my producer today, Clara Neipert, and I both read the book and enjoyed it very much. It's just a lot of fun to just read, and some pretty good recipes in there as well. What do you hope readers gain from Extra, Extra, Eat All About It? Jane, what do you think?
I think what we envisioned with this book was kind of how we approached historical cooking. I mean, neither of us are professional chefs. We just were fascinated by these recipes we came across and wanted to try them out and have fun while doing it. So we tried to put together kind of a casual cookbook that's approachable, that shows people that cooking historical recipes can be fun, it can be low stress, and the history alongside them can be equally as entertaining. So we just tried to create a really approachable book.
You know, one thing that I really liked about it, that there were so many tidbits and interesting stories, backstories to the recipes, or just backstories to the era, the time when the recipes were produced. You know, we find out a little about commercial canning in Wisconsin, or we've got really interesting stories about cherries and during Prohibition and the evolution of sandwiches and a whole lot more. And we'll get to those as we go along. But I'm wondering, what insight do newspaper recipes give us about a moment in history? And how does that differ from cookbooks? Maybe Randy can talk about that.
Yes. I think it's that newspapers could publish much faster than a cookbook, right? That's much more curated. And so we find a lot of the little trends that people would just try out. And maybe they wouldn't stick and they wouldn't make it into a cookbook, but we do see them in the newspapers. The one, for example, is in the 19-teens, that there was a craze about cooking everything and anything in paper bags in your oven.
Yeah.
So we tried that out with a stuffed onion, and we really like it. It's one of our favorite recipes now. But it's kind of a trend, or was a trendy thing that kind of fell out of fashion after the teens.
Yeah, there were some other things that fell out of fashion, too. Breakfast parties were popular around 1900, if I'm not mistaken. People would have breakfast parties.
Yes, they were. Which fascinated us. I mean, it's hard to say exactly why, but they were so fashionable. And what I love is the connection between these breakfast parties and the social column in the newspaper, which I feel like we don't really have social columns in our newspapers anymore. But back in the day, you really wanted to be mentioned in the social column as having been attending one of these breakfast parties. And they would list all the attendees, who was hosting. Sometimes it even lists what was served. And it inspired us. I think we'd like to host a breakfast party at some point.
We call them brunches now, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get to sleep in now.
We get to sleep in a little bit. And sometimes do a lot of the make-ahead the night before or the day before. Oh, man. What questions popped up for you as you began cooking? I mean, things were, the tools and so forth were different.
Yes. The little things in the recipes, we started out just, you know, trying different recipes that we would find and thought, how hard can it be? But then we really, there were more and more questions that kind of came up. So how would they have beaten their egg whites at the time, right? What was available? Because now we just have our stand mixers or hand mixers. But before there was really electricity in most households, what would they have used? And so we started looking into that in the newspapers. And that's so great about that resource of the historic newspapers. You can find ads for the kitchen gadgets that were available and new inventions and patents and all that.
Yeah, it was really interesting to me. And then some of the terms. Like a hot oven. You had to do a little digging to figure out what's a hot oven, didn't you?
Yeah, and it's right. Ovens, especially when they were wood fired, you really had to know your equipment much better. Thermometers weren't usually used in kitchens. You just kind of had to get a feel for what you were working with. And so there was no standardization of temperatures. Like Fahrenheit wasn't used in the kitchen until much later. And so it was more like, cook that in a cool oven or a slow oven. And you just kind of had to figure out what that meant. Luckily, then later we see some campaigns to help. Well, mostly women in the kitchen kind of standardize and be more efficient. And then the use of the thermometers started. And that's when we also see some conversions in the newspapers. And so that's how we could kind of figure out what we should do with our modern ovens.
Well, and I might add to this that you write in a very entertaining way. And I was amused by some of the comments that you had about testing. You tested all the recipes in the book, mm-hmm. and you had help.
Yes. Yes. we tested all 50 recipes in the book. I mean, we tested a bunch more, and then we picked 50 to put into the book. And we it kind of turned out into a Sunday night dinner event with some friends, and they were all very gracious with their taste buds, and they tested it all and were pretty honest, gave us opinions.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm very grateful for their bravery because we needed a group to test these with us.
Well, it sounded like a lot of fun to me. I wish I'd have been in your group. I would have loved to come and sit in and on those testing evenings on Sunday evening. And you in the book, it's interesting. I mean, you made some changes to the recipes a little, but you included the actual clipping of each recipe alongside your reprint. Why did you do that? I liked it, by the way, but what was your thinking?
We that was a decision that we felt really strongly about because we really wanted to keep the spirit of experimenting and kind of trying these out for yourself in the book. And while we were very happy with our interpretations and the changes that we made to the recipes to make them work in our modern kitchens, we also wanted to let readers look at the original recipes themselves. And if they decide that they want to interpret it a different way, that's great. I think that's really what we wanted to happen with our book. We want people to delve in and be curious.
You have a very funny story to talk about fire-baked eggs as it relates to camping. But let's talk a little bit about the history of camping in Wisconsin. How has the meaning of the word camping changed over time?
Yeah, I mean, we have in the beginning kind of military camps, also lumber camps, right? More related to work and where you had to be at a certain time. And then the idea of camping, kind of like we know it now, the casual camping came a little later. And it actually started more of what we now would call glamping. So rich people usually who had leisure time brought beds, like bed frames, and, you know, to spend time outdoors. But it was very much like they had tubs and they had very heavy equipment. And so it's a little later that the average person would have leisure time to go out and enjoy nature that way, and that it became more simplistic. And that's what we were looking for, kind of the recipes that were simpler. We have a little bit of a story of a group of young men who go out and canoe down a river and then would camp overnight. And so what would they have brought and what would they have cooked? And that's where the fire-baked eggs came into play.
It was published in the Wausau Pilot on October 3rd of 1911, and you ran some challenges with this recipe. Tell us about the process.
Yeah, I mean, you make a fire, and then you set the eggs by the fire. And the instructions are very vague, like how far from the fire. So, like, against the stones you would, the rocks you would put around the fire, maybe. But yeah, if they're too close, we notice that they tend to explode. And when it happened the first time, we had our group of friends there, and we thought we were getting shot at. Because there were some people in the woods that were practicing their shooting, and so we thought we were getting shot at because there were just things flying out of the fire, and you could hear the explosions. Luckily, that was not the case. It was just the eggs, and nobody was harmed, but it was definitely a learning curve for us.
Oh, boy.
A big learning curve, yeah. We had friends, like, picking out egg remnants and shells from their hair and on their clothes. It was it's one of our favorite memories together. Yeah.
Jane Conway and Randy Julia Ramson, our guests. They are the authors of Extra, Extra, Eat All About It, Recipes and Culinary Curiosities from Historic Wisconsin Newspapers. A really fun read with some really good-looking recipes in it as well. You can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you listening in today on WPR News. We're talking with our two guests, Jane Conway and Randy Julia Ramsden, authors of the book Extra, Extra, Eat All About It. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments or maybe your own experience to share. The number to call, 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. And just a reminder, at noon we'll talk about adult friendships. You'll hear how to meet new people and strengthen the bond you have with existing friends. So that's at noon today. Right now, though, we're talking about it's a cookbook, it's a history of recipes from historic Wisconsin newspapers, and it's very entertaining reading. So hope you'll join in. 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. To talk about nutrition for a minute, newspapers also offered nutritional advice alongside the recipes. Tell us about some of the nutritional advice. The Vilas County News had some, but maybe comment on it. Randy, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. I mean, there was just trends overall, kind of how we talked about it earlier, of what you could be cooking, but then also health-wise, right? What was recommended at the time, what wouldn't have been recommended. We can see some information from the government being reprinted in the newspapers, and then that being incorporated in the recipes we would find.
Yeah. Bananas. There are a few recipes for bananas in the book, and they're not native to Wisconsin. How did bananas get to the Midwest?
Yeah, we found that actually with a couple ingredients, right? Bananas, but also coconuts. We have a coconut cake from 1888 in the newspaper that we found in the newspaper. And so our thought was, well, wouldn't people just cook with what they had available in their gardens? But we learned, no, the world was much more globalized than that already. So the introduction of bananas was really interesting. There were instructions or recommendations on how to make them palatable to Wisconsin readers. So we were kind of thinking, it's a very different banana from what we know now. The heirloom bananas, there were different varieties. Whereas now we have mostly one, the Cavendish banana. And so the tastes were different, and people had to kind of learn how to consume bananas. And the newspaper was a great source to kind of find out how they would figure that out.
And banana peels caused quite the uproar. And, you know, there was a saying back when I was a kid, I think, what, did you slip on a banana peel or something? And I had never seen a banana peel thrown anywhere, but I guess that was a concern way back.
Yes, it was definitely. We only knew it from cartoons, right? Looking at cartoons and people slip on banana peels, kind of a slapstick comedy. But we found some articles mentioning that people slipped on banana peels and got hurt. And so some places, and that was mostly in the coastal regions of the country, right, where the bananas would come in, and there was a lot of consumption there. People didn't know what to do with peel, so they just threw it on the ground, and people would slip. And then people would call for legislation to kind of regulate how to dispose of your banana peels. But we do also see that in Wisconsin newspapers mentioned.
And you have a banana salad recipe published back in 1916 in the Mineral Point Tribune. Looked interesting. How does it come together? Do you remember off the top of your head, Jane?
Yes, that one, you know, we looked at that recipe, and there's part of us that just loves the absurd as well. You'll come across it in historic recipes, and this banana salad recipe really encapsulated that for us. It is just bananas. You'll peel them, cut them in half, and then top them with mayonnaise and a sprinkle of chopped peanuts. And then the recipe recommends to serve them on a bed of salad leaves. And, you know, we were curious, like, maybe this'll work. The flavor profiles will create something amazing when we try it. And it wasn't bad. It was definitely palatable, but it did just taste like bananas with mayonnaise and peanuts on them. It was exactly, you know, kind of what we were expecting.
Oh, boy. Anne in Green Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Larry. I enjoy your show so much, and especially today with the cooking. I was involved in the Hawks Inn development in Delafield, which was a stagecoach inn for a long time. And we put together a cookbook of recipes that we found on the premises where they served their guests. And I thought it was really funny that they included they called for butter the size of an egg. Well, that's very confusing, but you kind of guess at it and go for it, and I guess it didn't make too much difference. Anyway, and as far as the bananas, well, I'm from Iowa, southern Iowa, and, yeah, I grew up with banana sliced lengthwise, but my mom put any kind of nuts on it that she found after the mayonnaise and served it on lettuce. That's so funny that I hear about that. Anyway, I'd love to get the book, share it with my children and grandchildren. How do I do that? Is it a Wisconsin publication?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Jane, tell us how we get the book.
Of course, yeah. Well, you definitely check out your local bookstore to see if they have it, but then it can be easily ordered online at the Wisconsin Historical Society website, and you'll just look up our book, Extra, Extra, Eat All About It, and they make it very easy to order from there.
And there you go. Thanks so much. Well, butter the size of an egg. Did you get any of, did you see that at all, Randy?
Not the like size of an egg specifically, but right, like different spoons or you know, your grandma's heirloom cup full of flour, and then you just think, okay, I don't know what that cup was, and that's when we started experimenting, right? How much of that should actually be in there, and that's part of the fun, to kind of experiment, make lots of batches of the same thing, and see what works out best.
And Anne and anybody else, I'll let you know, we have a link to the book. We will have a link to the book on our website at talkatwpr.org/Larry, or wpr.org/Larry. Go to today's date. And we post the shows, each day's show at 2 o'clock. So you will have a link to the book at 2 o'clock. Right there. Or if you want to hear the whole show all over again, all of our shows are online, and you can find them there. So there you, and thanks so much. That was great, a great call. Susie in Manitowoc, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for the show. It's really fun, and so much fun to hear her story about the exploding eggs. Oh, and it brought back memories of my sisters and cousins went camping and took some canned goods with us. We were preteens, even smaller, some of us were. And my cousin Myra said, we want to do beans. You always take beans when you're camping. So we want to do beans. So she said, oh, put this right in the fire. She said, you don't have to open it first. She said, I've seen them do this in movies. Well, we put it in the fire and went about our business, kind of forgot it. Pretty soon we heard, boom, explosion. And like Randy said, we thought we'd been shot. But then we went down the hill, and there were beans all over the place, and the can was flat. It totally opened up the can flat, and it was on the hill. We laughed and laughed and laughed till our sides ached.
Oh, that's a great story, Susie. Oh, my goodness. Jane, have you gotten stories from folks who have read your book or looked at it? That's kind of fun stories like that?
No, honestly, this is one of the first ones we have that about exploding food, and I just absolutely love it. Yeah.
Susie, thanks for sharing that. Appreciate it. Dee in Platteville, your turn. Hi, Dee.
Well, I love recipes from newspapers, but I like cookbook recipes too, especially church cookbooks. A recipe that had eluded me since my mother-in-law died 35 years ago was her recipe for a German dessert that she called Schmackkuchen. Some of the family members got it, but I was not one of the lucky ones, and I have been trying to make it for all these many years. I happened to be looking for a different recipe in an old cookbook that had belonged to her at Christmas time, and here I found the recipe. But like those recipes you have found, that was a little vague. It said a moderate oven. It said roll out in the sheet pan. It didn't give me sizes. I made it. I know how we will modify it to make it more like hers. But, yeah, it's a lot of trial and error.
Dee, thanks. And it was a lot of trial and error for you, wasn't it, Randy?
Yeah, it's. I think we just recently made an election cake, which used to be a thing for, you know, people making cake on election day. And it called for an obscene amount of yeast. And we just couldn't fathom putting that much yeast into a simple cake. And so, yeah, we started looking into it, but people used brewer's yeast, right? Like the consistency of the yeast were much different. They weren't as active as the dry active yeast we can buy now. And so, yeah, you kind of look at the history of the ingredient as well to kind of make sense of the amount.
Yeah, if you use the same amount of active dry, you'd probably get another exploding.
Yeah, I think it was over a cup, or like a cup, something like that. And
it was
no,
a huge amount.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Dee, thanks a lot. And by the way, Dee mentioned it was a German dessert. And here's another thing I learned. I picked up quite a few things about newspapers back in the day. And there were a heck of a lot of newspapers, and I'll just zero in on the German ones, because in Wisconsin, you say there were over 200 newspapers published in German in Wisconsin. Is that really true, Jane?
It is true, and I'll actually hand this over to Randy. She is really an expert on these German newspapers.
Yeah, go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, there were lots of even small town newspapers. So where we know there was a large German population in Milwaukee, but then even smaller towns. I think it was Sauk City, that for a long time the only newspaper published there was in the German language, just because the people who settled there spoke German, printed German, and they started their own newspaper. So we have a lot of German language newspapers that we can now look at and kind of see. And we looked at some recipes that were in there. I think one of Jane's favorites, the Swimming Island, is another dessert that is not. I mean, that's also something we learned. It's definitely the recipes printed in immigrant newspapers are not representative of that cuisine, right? This was not the staple German recipes that immigrants brought necessarily, but maybe with a twist, maybe trying something new with ingredients they could find here. And so the Swimming Island, for example, is a dessert that is a hard-boiled egg that you roll in cinnamon and sugar, and then dunk in pancake batter, deep fry, and then cinnamon and sugar, more batter, deep fry until all the batter is gone. And then you douse it in hot sweetened wine.
Oh, boy. That's one I overlooked when I was reading your book. How did it taste?
It's amazing. I think I was a little bit apprehensive to try it. I couldn't really imagine, you know, cinnamon and sugar going with a hard-boiled egg, but it worked. It was great. I mean, it really just tasted like any other sort of fried food with that cinnamon taste in the dough, and it worked great with the egg, and then the hot, spiced, sweetened wine over it was, yeah, I loved it. It was incredible.
I guess Jane Conway and Randy Julia Ramsden, their book, Extra, Extra, Eat All About It. Great talking with them. And maybe you've got an experience to share or a story to tell. Hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Can't talk about food in Wisconsin without talking about cheese. How did Wisconsin become known for its cheese production? It really started as something farmers made for their own families, isn't it?
It did, yeah. That was something new to me that I learned when we were researching this book, is that cheese making was originally something just done on a small scale on a farm to preserve their dairy product, because it lasted a lot longer than dairy in other forms. And then a lot of our history of commercial cheese making dealt with people coming from New York State, and they brought with them their experience working in these cheese making factories, which standardized cheese making and kind of transformed the industry in Wisconsin to what it is today.
Yeah. In 1922, I think it was, the Wausau Pilot published a recipe for cheese and English walnut sandwiches. How do you make that sandwich? Jane, do you want to take that?
Of course, yeah. This sandwich, it's great. So you create the filling out of cheese mixed with walnuts, and I think we have some mayonnaise mixed in there too to kind of make it creamier. It's a very simple sandwich. And then you'll spread it on a slice of bread, add a leaf of lettuce, and another slice on top. And it was wonderful, though. I think I want walnuts in more sandwiches. It adds a great flavor and an amazing crunch to each bite.
I like the pimento sandwich recipe with cheese and, of course, pimentos and hard-boiled eggs. I thought, oh, I'm going to give that one a try. You actually, you deal a bit with the evolution of sandwiches. And I just saw an article in, I think it was Washington Post, about the popularity of sandwiches in our country. And, you know, how it's kind of the most popular thing that we eat anymore is, you know, a sandwich. But talk about the evolution of that. Randy, maybe?
I think it's kind of interesting to look at different sandwiches throughout time, right? We also have, like, the open-faced sandwich. And then if you wanted to take it on the road, right, you would close it up. And that's why we started looking at different recipes for the sandwiches, but also the different breads that would have been used. We have a recipe for a pumpernickel bread in there. I really like the ham sandwich, and it's almost like a ham, like salad sandwich. Mm-hmm. You got some pickles in there, some mustard, some softened butter. And then, yeah, you spread it on, we use the pumpernickel bread, and kind of serve it as an open-faced sandwich. And that's I think, my favorite sandwich in the book.
Oh, well, I'll have to give that one a try. And speaking of bread, you mentioned you have kind of an interesting story about sourdough and how that term sourdough came about, Jane.
Yeah, sourdough. This really surprised us as we were searching through the newspapers trying to find some other sourdough recipes and just see what the mentions of sourdough were like. And we kept seeing sourdough being used as a reference for people. And we found that people going out to Alaska in the early days of the gold rush were being called sourdoughs because they would keep their sourdough starter in a little pouch close to their chest to keep it warm and alive. And it was a very popular thing with the folks out there, and it kind of turned into this term of being called a sourdough if you were going out for the gold rush.
Yeah, I thought that was it's just one of the many fascinating little side stories that just pepper the book, which makes it adds to the fun of reading it and looking at the recipes themselves. Lynn and Winneconne has something. Let's go there. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Good. Okay, just a little offering from the writer's point of view, a newspaper writer, a freelance writer. I was also a corporate and whatever staff writer, too, but it started in Hawaii. I moved to Hawaii from Winneconne here, and I had a column called The Nitty Gritty Grub Guide. This was in the 70s, kind of the, you know, almost edge of the hippie era or whatever. So I wrote, and it was just kind of fun. You know, I'd interview people, talk to people, had friends that made good whatever, and of course used, you know, Hawaiian recipes and things like that, Portuguese bean soup and stuff. And then I went into a regular newspaper, a dining out section, and that related to restaurants, and that coupled up with also recipes sometimes. And then I came back to Wisconsin, and I got going with the Oshkosh Northwestern, and they kind of put together a package for me as a freelancer, kind of semi-staff freelancer. But again, the variety of people that I met, and I do recipes, sturgeon and walleye or venison or apples, you know, the seasonal thing. So it was just a fun connection with getting back home again, too.
Oh, Lynn, thanks so much for calling. And it's great to hear from somebody who actually wrote recipes partially for a living. Jane, did you guys run into talk to any of the writers?
No, we didn't actually. We did work pretty hard to learn about a certain woman's editor. she would feature recipes sourced from local people in Wisconsin, which we just loved seeing because a lot of content in the newspapers for recipes was syndicated and wasn't coming locally from the state. But there was a column run by just the women's editor that didn't name her, and we worked pretty hard to track down who she was. We didn't have any luck, and we're still searching, but yeah, we haven't spoken to any of the other writers.
Well, maybe somebody else has an idea and can call in and let you know that it's possible. Yeah. It's happened before on this program.
It was a Wausau pilot, so anybody who knows anything about the Wausau pilot women's editor, please let us know.
All right, the Wausau pilot women's editor. There you go. Lynn, thanks again. Barb in Madison, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi. A few years ago, my family is Czech, and my grandparents came over at the early part of the century, and so they brought all of their recipes. And a few years ago, we set about putting together a family cookbook and dug out all the handwritten stuff. And some of the things that we found were, like, for a casserole, use 15 cents worth of hamburger. And the Czechs had a lot of baked goods, you know, like raised breads, raisin breads, and sweet doughs and things like that. And so a lot of the recipes started out with make a sweet dough, not too sweet and not too heavy, you know. And when we would ask, like, my mom and my aunts and stuff like that, they kind of didn't really know either as far as quantities, you know, and they'd say, well, you know, flour and milk and eggs. And you go, well, what else? Like, is there yeast? And then they'd get kind of cranky, you know, of course there's yeast, you know, and enough, you know, add until it feels good and bake until done. And, you know, so it was kind of a challenge. And when we put the cookbook together, we really tried to not change the recipes at all. So it's kind of an adventure making them, you know.
Oh, Barb, that's wonderful. Well, you two, Randy, I'll turn to you maybe. You saw sort of similar kinds of things in some of the older recipes, didn't you?
Yes, definitely. What a great project to do that for the family history, too, right? Just to get a taste of what your ancestors ate as well. We ran into things where it was either, market price, so 15 cents worth of whatever, which then the newspapers are a great resource because you can go in and you see how much things cost. Right down to that week, you could see what grocers would charge. So that may also help. We've also had some, I think it was like an egg white frosting. It just said to make a frosting. And we didn't really know what that would have entailed at the time. So really looking at the newspapers from that time and then finding just a basic recipe for that frosting and then going with that helped us a lot.
Oh, very, very cool. Barb, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jane Conway and Randy Julia Ramsden, our guests today. Their book, Extra, Extra, Eat All About It. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining in today. Tomorrow on the show, wildlife expert Scott Cravens back to talk about an academy training of the next generation of conservationists, among other things. Right now, though, we're taking a look at the book Extra, Extra, Eat All About It with its authors, Jane Conway and Randy Julia Ramsden. You can join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Stella in Sturgeon Bay has a comment for us. Hi, Stella.
Hi. Quite a number of years ago, my husband and I received a copy of my great-grandmother's church cookbook. Probably about mid-1800s. And we baked a recipe for ginger snaps. And at the end of the recipe, there was a comment from the woman who submitted it that said, these will keep very well if locked up.
There you go. Stella, thanks for calling. Did you find a little bit of humor in any of those recipes, Jane?
Oh, let me think if we found any kind of humorous recipes, if you can think of any too, Randy.
I put together a wild game cooking cookbook once, and I, as a joke, I put in a recipe for elephant stew, which involved a medium-sized elephant, and I forget how many thousand gallons of water, and if more was needed, you could add one rabbit, but be careful because most people don't like a hare in their soup.
That's great. Yeah.
H-A-R-E. So anyway, enough about me. Can you remember? I suppose newspaper columnists probably wouldn't have, tried to make light of any of it.
I think we can maybe, with the, right, there were some tips on, etiquette tips on how to eat candy and how to share candy and sweets with others. Right, so that there's a little bit of the, you should share, but if you're offered, only take one or two, but don't take three. So there's a little bit of humor in that, yeah. But I think there are, what we've seen is that people would kind of take the clippings from the recipe clippings from the newspaper and then kind of make their own scrapbook. Cookbook, and that's, I think, probably where in the margins they would have their own little comments.
Mm. Chuck in McHenry, Illinois, emailed in. He was leafing through an old cookbook and ran across a mention of pearl ash, an ingredient with which he was unfamiliar. At best, Chuck can determine the word is pronounced pearl ash and is made from wood ash lye.
Yeah, I think that's what they used for pretzel making, right? The pretzels.
Oh.
And in baking, yeah, because that's yeah. where you would need the lye to. Just lots of ingredients that we also had to kind of dig into first before we could really determine what it was.
Chuck wanted to know how you could make it yourself as it's no longer available. I'm not sure if we can answer that question, Jane.
I'm not sure we can either.
Maybe just make a fire and collect some ashes.
Pour some lye on it?
Don't sue us if you get sick.
Definitely look through the newspapers, though. You never know what you're going to find in there. You might find some instructions.
Yeah. Yeah, an interesting story about cherries and prohibition and also how cherries came to be known from Door County.
Yeah, I've really loved researching cherries in Door County, and what I found so interesting was that they grew so well in that climate. It was a really good climate for them. The soil was amazing, but the issue is that a lot of the bedrock in Door County is really right below the soil, which naturally would make it really hard to plant trees. And we found some mentions of farmers resorting to dynamite to break up that bedrock to get their cherry trees in, which I just loved to imagine them doing that. Just amazing.
It's been fun to watch that from a distance.
Yes, from a distance, definitely.
Well, what about the prohibition part of it with cherries?
The prohibition with cherries.
Or prohibition, where there was some alcohol connections.
Oh, the maraschino cherries.
Yes.
Because originally maraschino cherries came from Europe, and they were in an alcoholic liqueur, and so Americans had to come up with a different way of having that sweet treat on their sundae or in their then mocktails when Prohibition came around, and that's how the maraschino cherry that we now know was developed.
Yeah, really interesting. And I thought it was kind of interesting that vegetarianism is not a modern concept. And going back to Robert La Follette, I think, our former governor was a vegetarian.
He was, yes. And yeah, it was amazing to see that vegetarianism has been around for a long time. And kind of the early response to it was similar to how people kind of responded to vegans, I think. There was just, it was very strange, very otherworldly. And there were vegetarian restaurants in big cities, you know, like New York and coastal cities. So it just seemed like something folks do out in the cities. But it began to become more mainstream when Americans started to become more health conscious and interested in nutrition in the early 1900s. And then with the meatpacking scandals, there were a lot of issues with sanitation in meat, and that kind of pushed Americans even further to really embrace vegetarianism. But something that we found really humorous is that in a lot of recipes that were called vegetarian, there would be poultry, because oftentimes it was not considered to be meat. So, yeah, we just loved coming across that.
Yeah, I was thinking back. I was trying to remember the book, very popular book. Was it The Jungle by Upton Sinclair?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can remember reading that in my college days, and that it would be pretty much enough to turn anybody off from eating meat if you read that book.
Oh, yeah. It had a huge impact.
I know it did. Well, instant hot chocolate was invented right here in Wisconsin, and you tell that story and of course, have a recipe relating to it.
Yes, we talk a little bit about Swiss Miss, and that also just inventions that come out of things that are happening in the world. So it was a Wisconsin company that was making kind of powdered milk product for the troops during, I believe it was the Korean War. And they had to make, in order to fulfill their government contract, they overproduced. And then they had to figure out a way of using the extra they had. And so in the family kitchen, they started experimenting and turned that into the instant hot chocolate we still know today. And it was really fun to learn about that. That's part of Wisconsin history.
And in our last minute, there's one that the stuffed onions, the paper in a paper bag recipe, it's in the book, and it's one of your favorites, if I'm not mistaken.
Definitely. Yeah. We make that all the time.
And you've got some really interesting stories about paper bag cooking, because it was quite popular at one point. And people still do it a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think it's mostly known now for kind of the French en papillote.
Yeah.
So in enveloped and paper method. But the trend in the 19-teens actually came from a British chef that was then he came out with a cookbook, and a lot of people in the U.S. started cooking like that. And there were columns just dedicated to cooking anything in a paper bag in some of the Wisconsin newspapers.
Well, based on your recommendation and writing about it in the book, I'm definitely going to try this stuff. Onions cooked in a paper bag. I'm going to try that recipe. Jane, Randy, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. You've got a great book there, and I really enjoyed reading it. And I will follow up on the pimento sandwich and the stuffed onion in a paper bag for sure. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jane Conway and Randy Julia Ramsden, authors of Extra, Extra, Eat All About It. Fun talking with them, and I hope you get a chance to pick up a copy of the book. Coming up, we'll talk about making friends as an adult. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.